Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading this week's local articles from the San Angelo Standard Times. I'll be reading articles that began Friday, July 31st, and continue up through today, the day that I'm reading, Thursday, August 6th. I'll begin with the most recent articles. August 6th, San Angelo and Tom Green County report 47 new COVID-19 cases. August 6th, City of San Angelo, 2,560 positive cases reported, 47 new positive cases, 51 currently hospitalized, 30 deaths in Tom Green County, 20 county residents, 10 from other counties, 806 active cases. San Angelo ISD hosts virtual summit weighing name change of Robert Lee Middle School by John Tufts, published Thursday, August 6th. Officials with San Angelo Independent School District hosted a digital summit Thursday, seeking more community input on whether or not to change the name of Lee Middle School in the wake of nationwide and local protests against racism. Calls to change the school's name began in June 2020, days after demonstrations ignited around the country after the death of George Floyd, as symbols of the Confederacy came under scrutiny. A petition appeared on change.org requesting the West Texas School District consider a new name for Robert E. Lee Middle School, 2500 Sherwood Way. Lee Middle School, as the district refers to it on their official website, caters to students in grades 6 through 8. The campus mascot is listed as the Rebels. On Thursday, August 6, district officials held a digital engaging equity summit using the video conferencing app Zoom. About 45 people participated in the summit, which included school board members, area principals, current and former San Angelo ISD teachers, members of the NAACP attending Angelo State University, as well as other San Angelo residents. "We understand this is a sensitive topic that members of our community care deeply about, so this plan provides an intentional, thorough process to allow us to hear from the varied perspectives and unique voices in our community," a statement from San Angelo ISD read concerning the summit. Varied perspectives were exactly what the district got. San Angelo resident Sally Ayana said she was concerned about the school's name and thought it should be changed. "I have children who have attended school there, and I think the name should be something more inclusive and inspiring," Ayana said. Other residents felt changing the name was unwarranted and an overreaction. "As a former middle school and high school graduate of San Angelo, there's never been a problem before. But because of what's been going on recently, it's now become a problem," said one participant who did not give his name before speaking. "It's embarrassing for the city of San Angelo to come to this point. I question the sanity of any council or board on changing the name." Participants were broken into groups where they were asked a series of questions, which included what their hopes were for students who attended San Angelo ISD, how the Lee Middle School name possibly impacts its students, and if the name were to change, who should make that decision? Elected school board officials, voters who pay taxes to the school district, or someone else? During the course of 2 hours, spokespeople from each group expressed their thoughts concerning Lee Middle School. During one such occasion, a retired San Angelo ISD teacher, Paula Fontenot, voiced her opinion in opposition to those who felt changing the school's name was akin to erasing history. "I taught at Lee for a couple of years. Students at Lee know who Robert E. Lee was. They know what he stood for, and they know he fought for slavery," Fontenot said. "I've talked to a lot of students. When you've got a large portion of kids at a school who feel like their school mascot, the Rebels, or your school name is honoring people who fought for the right to keep people enslaved, they cannot develop a sense of pride in that school, and there's not a sense of unity." Another virtual summit will be available to the public Thursday beginning at 6 p.m. The district will host a second virtual summit open to members of the public beginning at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. September 5th. Those interested in participating must email San Angelo ISD at communications@saisd.org. Important dates to know if you want to participate. August 26th through September 14th, online survey open to the public. September 1st, in-person focus groups. September 15th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., virtual summits open to the public. October 8th, Advisory Council Design Team reviews the data to determine next steps. October 19th, proposal on retention or renaming action taken to the Board of Trustees for consideration. For further information, visit saisd.org/engaging-equity/. San Angelo landscaper with prior fraud convictions pleads in theft, bail jumping, by Elena Edgen. A San Angelo landscaper charged with theft in three Texas counties entered a plea Thursday in a case that began with a Better Business Bureau investigation in July 2019. On Thursday, August 6th, Michael Eugene LaFoy, 49, appeared in a Zoom video conference with the 51st District Court Judge Carmen Dusek for a plea hearing. LaFoy was charged with theft of property between $1,500 and $30,000 and bail jumping in Tom Green County, misdemeanor theft in Concho County, and two counts of theft in Midland County. LaFoy pleaded guilty to the theft of property charge, a state jail felony punishable by up to 2 years in jail, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. In exchange for LaFoy's plea, the state recommended he serve 1 year in jail and pay $5,300 in restitution. The bail jumping and Concho County charge would be dropped as part of the agreement. Dusek accepted the recommendation and sentenced LaFoy on those terms. LaFoy was also credited 29 days to his jail time. The State of Texas versus Michael Eugene LaFoy. On July 2, 2019, LaFoy received a $3,000 check from a company as an advance for home repair services on a building in the 1900 block of West Tuig Avenue. He agreed to do the repairs and cashed the check, but never completed the work, records state. By November 19, 2019, LaFoy had not returned the money or done the work. The BBB uncovered a history of similar schemes, where LaFoy, working under Ram Services, would go door to door collecting money and promising to trim trees, clean the property, and lay sod. He would not return to do the work, the report stated. Complaints on the Bureau's page date back to 2017, showing a pattern of failing to complete work. LaFoy was arrested November 21, 2019, on suspicion of theft of property, between $1,500 and $30,000. He was released from Tom Green County Jail on a $15,000 bond the following day. On January 9th, he was indicted on the same charge. On March 18th, LaFoy returned to jail on suspicion of two counts of property theft out of Midland County. He was released 2 days later on a $1,000 bond. About a week later, on March 27th, LaFoy was booked into jail again on suspicion of theft of property between $100 and $750 by check, and released later that day on a $500 bond. On July 14th, LaFoy was booked into Tom Green County Jail on the indicted charge of bail jumping and five warrants. LaFoy previously sentenced in FBI investigation. In February 2012, the former Midland resident appeared on the FBI's radar after they discovered a wire fraud scheme concerning a non-existent oil field pipeline, according to an FBI report. The report also showed this was not the first time. LaFoy, operating as LaFoy Pipe, agreed to sell $155,000 of 4.5-inch oil field pipe to Arvine Pipe and Supply, Arvine, in Norman, Oklahoma. The Oklahoma company sent the money via wire transfer but never received the pipe, according to the FBI report. LaFoy told the court that when he negotiated the sale, he knew he could not deliver. When Arvine complained, he sent emails promising delivery was imminent, according to the report. On October 25, 2012, LaFoy pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 37 months in federal prison, to be followed by 3 years supervised release. He also had to pay $407,000 restitution to Arvine, Brandvik Pipe and Equipment of Borger, Texas, Tycoon Operating of Plano, Texas, and May Oilfield Pipe of Overton, Texas. These companies were defrauded by LaFoy in a similar way. Records show that LaFoy was also sentenced in 2005 for wire fraud in the Midland-Odessa area. San Angelo woman protects herself with knife during home burglary, by Jen Guadarrama. A 26-year-old woman used a knife on attackers after they forced their way into her residence, according to police. The San Angelo Police Department responded to the 500 block of East Harris Avenue about 11:50 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, for a reported prowler attempting to enter the residence, according to a news release. When officers arrived, they found the 26-year-old at the home and learned she'd been assaulted by three suspects. The resident told police she knew two of the women who entered the home and that she injured one while fighting them off with a knife. Police identified the woman as suspects and found them in a residence about a block away, where officers also located and seized an undisclosed amount of marijuana, the release stated. One of the women was treated at Shannon Medical Center for minor knife wounds suffered during the incident before she was taken into custody. Elizabeth Guerrero, 38, was arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation. Cecilia Guerrero, 17, was arrested on suspicion of burglary of a habitation and possession of marijuana. Both women, who are mother and daughter, remained in Tom Green County Jail as of 2:30 p.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. The third suspect, an unidentified male, has not been located. San Angelo's annual Shine a Light event, taking place virtually due to COVID-19, by Rosanna Aguilera. West Texas Counseling and Guidance presents the 2020 Shine a Light movement, taking place until September 30th, with a virtual event Saturday, September 12th. The Event for Suicide Prevention and Awareness is an annual event for families and friends who have lost a loved one to suicide, as well as an opportunity to raise awareness and education for suicide prevention within the community, according to a news release. This year, a virtual movement is taking place in lieu of the honorary Shine a Light Memorial Walk. The movement includes the simple act of moving for 20 minutes, donating $20, and nominating two others to participate to help support suicide awareness. Social media plays a big component as we ask those who participate to take a photo and share to social media using the hashtag 2020Shine, the release stated. Participants are able to register online to receive their complimentary participation medal, as well as purchase a t-shirt, pre-ordered barbecue plates, and more. To register online, or for more information, visit wtcg.us/2020shine or call 325-262-0055. The event presentation will be virtual and will include annual traditions, as in reading of names, a reveal of a special art installation, and more. WTCG will provide more details. Missing some donkeys? Two were found running around San Angelo Thursday morning, by Elena Edgen. Two donkeys have been placed at the San Angelo Animal Shelter Thursday after they were found running around Houston Hart, according to the City of San Angelo. The two donkeys were in the 1600 block of Houston Hart and picked up by animal control. They are at the city shelter, 3142 U.S. Highway 67 North. The owner of the donkeys can call the shelter at 325-657-4224 or claim them in person at the shelter. The following articles were published Wednesday, August 5th. Police identify San Angelo man killed in officer-involved shooting, by Elena Edgen and Colin Murphy. San Angelo police have identified the man killed during an officer-involved shooting near O.C. Fisher Dam on Wednesday afternoon. The incident began about 4:19 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, in the 700 block of Wicklow Court in West San Angelo for a domestic violence situation involving an armed man. When officers arrived, they attempted to stop the suspect who was leaving in a vehicle. About 4:25 p.m., police radio communications indicated a chase was in progress and a fleeing vehicle was heading toward the dam. The suspect exited the vehicle in the 4600 block of Arden Road after a slow-speed pursuit and fled on foot into an open field near Mercedes Avenue toward the O.C. Fisher Dam spillway. During the chase, an officer could be heard yelling, "Put the gun down." At a news conference Wednesday night, Tracy Pitt Fox, public information officer with the San Angelo Police Department, said the officers instructed the man to drop the weapon, but he continued fleeing into San Angelo State Park property and began firing rounds. Officers returned fire, striking Roberto Hernandez Jr., 29, of San Angelo. Hernandez died at the scene. Police blocked a stretch of Arden Road between Mercedes Avenue and Hunter's Glen Road and asked residents in the Bluffs area to find an alternate route. The Texas Rangers are investigating, and the officers involved were placed on administrative leave, which is standard procedure. Police say man sexually assaulted child and recorded it in San Angelo, fled to Colorado. By Elena Edgen. A man has been in Colorado after a San Angelo child was sexually assaulted three times, according to a San Angelo police news release. On Sunday, August 2nd, police responded to a report of child sexual assault in San Angelo. Officers determined a 26-year-old man had sexually assaulted the child, who was younger than 14 years old, three times. The man also recorded the assaults on his cell phone, according to the release. The man fled to Ray, Colorado, and was arrested by the city's police on the San Angelo warrant. Pablo Albert Lemus Jr., 26, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated sexual assault of a child and sexual performance of a child. He remained in Yuma County Jail in Colorado, awaiting extradition and a $250,000 bond, according to the release. San Angelo Family Shelter in need of donations. Here's how you can help, from staff reports. The family shelter is seeking donations for its emergency safe haven. Donations of paper towels, toilet paper, plates, bowls, utensils, napkins, and 39-gallon trash bags are among the items most needed. Laundry detergent, bleach, and Pine Sol are also needed. Items may be donated at the shelter's porch at 79 Gillis Street. The family shelter is dedicated to reducing domestic violence by providing a safe haven, case management, legal advocacy, victim advocacy, and educational services for victims, its website notes. For more information or other ways to help, call the family shelter director, Valerie Tillery, at 325-655-5774. You can also learn more online at familyshelter.sa.org. If you need assistance, call the shelter's 24-hour hotline at 800-749-8631. San Angelo ISD will offer bilingual education to pre-K and kindergarten students, by John Tufts. Officials with San Angelo Independent School District on Tuesday announced a new bilingual education program will be available for its pre-kindergarten and kindergarten students identified as English learners, according to a news release. The program will help these students become proficient in listening, speaking, reading, and writing in English. Students will receive instructions in English and Spanish, which will be gradually phased out, with most students transitioning to English-only instruction by first grade and exiting from the bilingual program by third grade, the release stated. Developing a child's home language is critical for developing their English language skills, officials stated. About 3.8 million students in the U.S. schools are native Spanish speakers and not proficient in English, according to a 2017 assessment by the National Center for Education Statistics. Among the roughly 5 million students who attend public schools in Texas, up to 18% have been identified as English language learners, the fastest growing demographic in schools and the lowest performing, as judged by achievement tests and graduation rates. Language experts recommend dual language programs as a means to close the achievement gap in literacy between English learners and native English speakers, according to research. Officials with San Angelo ISD said the program will help build knowledge and learning of academic subjects in a child's first language and in English while instilling self-assurance, confidence, and cultural pride, according to a release. San Angelo ISD officials said the bilingual education program is available at Glenmore and Bradford Elementary Schools, but is open to all students who qualify. Transportation will be provided to students who qualify, and instruction in the program will be delivered by a teacher appropriately certified in bilingual education. To qualify for the bilingual program, officials with SAISD will administer a language proficiency test if a student lists their language is something other than English during the enrollment process. Officials said the highlights of the program include students receive literacy instruction in Spanish in grades pre-K through first grade. Students receive mathematics, science, and social studies in Spanish their pre-K year. Instruction in English is then phased in through second grade. Students are provided opportunities to engage in bilingual activities that support their social development, as well as their academic development. Students are given progress checks to monitor understanding of content in both English and Spanish when appropriate. Homework assignments will be given in English and/or Spanish as appropriate for the student and should require minimal parental support. For more information about the bilingual education program, please contact SAISD Director of Bilingual and English Language Learners, Christy Diego, at 325-947-3838, extension 798, or email Christy, C-H-R-I-S-T-Y, dot Diego at SAISD.org. SAISD officials issued the news release in Spanish as well. Affidavit states, San Angelo man charged with manslaughter lied to police after struggle for gun, by Elena Edgen. An arrest affidavit has detailed what led to the shooting death of an 18-year-old San Angelo man on Saturday. On Saturday, August 1st, police responded to a report of a shooting victim in the 200 block of Coberlin Street. Officers located Carlos Galvin, 18, with a gunshot wound to the stomach area, right of the navel, according to the affidavit. Another man was with Galvin in the apartment. Galvin was transported to the Shannon Medical Center, where he was pronounced deceased. The suspect told officers he had been shot outside, talking on the phone for about 15 minutes when he heard a gunshot. He entered the apartment, found Galvin, and called 911, according to his first statement to officers. He also told officers he saw a black man dressed in black with 4 to 6 inch long dreadlocks and a do-rag running from the apartment, according to the affidavit. Officers pulled video surveillance of the area, which showed no one fleeing the apartment before the shooting. A search of the apartment revealed a Glock 17 9mm handgun in a bedroom closet and a bullet slug on a carpet in the bathroom, records state. Police spoke with the suspect again, who told officers Galvin was waving around the Glock and the suspect took the gun, according to the affidavit. When he took the gun, he pulled the trigger, unaware that it was loaded, he told police. The suspect also told officers his earlier statement about a man running from the apartment was false, records state. Nathan Blake Gonzalez, 20, was arrested on suspicion of manslaughter and 5 warrants shortly after 1 a.m. Sunday. He was released from Tom Green County Jail on a $30,000 bond Monday, according to online jail records. Now, the following articles are the ones that were published Tuesday, August 4th. Housing planned near downtown San Angelo to feature community garden in once blighted area by John Tufts. City Council members unanimously approved an amendment that could lead to the construction of new homes that will feature a community garden in a once blighted area near downtown San Angelo. On Tuesday, August 4th, Neighborhood and Family Services Director Bob Salas requested officials allow several homes from the Baptist Memorial Retirement Campus be relocated to the Fort Concho neighborhood under the city's Infill Development Incentive Program. The new housing development will be called Rio Rancho Estates. These relocated units would undergo an inspection by staff to ensure that the units are safe and decent and do not present a lead-based paint hazard, Salas said. In October 2019, the city approved $200,000 for developers willing to construct new single-family housing, duplexes, or apartments with no more than 8 units in one of the 6 neighborhoods officials have targeted for revitalization. Those 6 areas include 1. Blackshear by 29th Street on the north, North Chadburn to the east, Houston Hart to the south, and the railroad tracks to the west. 2. Reagan by 29th Street on the north, North Chadburn on the west, Houston Hart on the south, and Armstrong and North Main Street on the east. 3. Fort Concho by Houston Hart on the north, Bell Street and Laurie Avenue on the east, Main Street and Hill on the west, and Rio Concho River on the south. 4. Rio Vista by South Chadburn and Metcalf Street on the east, Avenue I and Avenue L on the north, Hill Street, the railroad tracks, and Foster on the east, and Arroyo Drive West, Avenue X on the south. 5. Lakeview by Armstrong to the east, East 50th, Grape Creek Road, and Collie Lane to the north, Bryant and Lake Drive to the west, and 29th and 28th Streets to the south. 6. Bel Air by Paint Rock Road to the south, Loop 308 to the east, Concho River to the north, and Bell Street to the west. As part of the program, the city will pay $5,000 per unit for eligible projects to be used at the discretion of the developer. As of August 4th, the program had a balance of up to $60,000, according to city documents. Rio Rancho Estates project developer Aliza Denny said Baptist Memorial Retirement had 8 or more single-family homes it wished to demolish or relocate, and that moving them in the Fort Concho neighborhood was a win-win for the city. "These homes are something that can really rejuvenate this area," Denny said, and noted the housing project would not only afford the city of San Angelo additional tax revenue, it would be a boon to downtown business owners. "My location is approximately 2 minutes away from downtown San Angelo," Denny said. "I'm hoping to be a solution here for everybody." Denny told City Council she purchased an 8.5-acre empty parcel of land 9 months ago at the corner of Rio Concho Drive, across from River Point Apartments, which encompassed about 3 city blocks between Buchanan and Irene Streets. "When I purchased these lots, it was my idea that there were basically 8.5 acres of undeveloped land, not platted, no utilities, being underutilized right by downtown," Denny said. "I would like to develop this area." Denny said while she had no financial backing and would not construct the homes herself, she had partnered with SKG Engineering to create a site plan for the area, that utilities had been established, a gated fence had been built, and that the area had been rid of trash. "For lack of a better word, it was a dump site," Denny said. "I personally removed over 8 loads of trash. It's a beautiful piece of property." Denny said homes planned for the area would be pier and beam construction, consist of 1,000 to 2,000 square feet, not including an attached garage, and would create a pocket neighborhood close to downtown San Angelo. Additional plans for the area included a community garden with common areas for residents to enjoy. Denny asked City Council to include her in the Infill Development Incentive Program, which council members appear to support. "This particular area has been blighted for years," said District 3 council member Harry Thomas. "It really has been a dumping ground. I like the idea that we're taking existing homes from one part of the community and placing them in an area that's been underutilized." District 1 council member Tommy Hebert expressed his support of the project and welcomed similar projects around San Angelo, possibly in the future. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter said she was looking forward to seeing the area for herself at the conclusion of Tuesday's meeting, a drive that would take about a minute from the McNeese Convention Center. Denny said the entire development was slated to include as many as 16 homes and could be finished within the next 12 months. City Council unanimously approved the amendment to include Rio Rancho Estates in the Infill Development Incentive Program, 7-0. Former San Angelo Band Director inducted into Texas Bandmasters Hall of Fame by Rosanna Aguilera. A retired band director with over 40 years of teaching under his belt received an induction into the Texas Bandmasters Hall of Fame. Dois Pace is among 317 directors who have been given this honor since 1974 when the Hall of Fame started. Members must be over the age of 65 and retired from active teaching to be inducted. To be eligible for consideration, a band director must have produced and maintained an outstanding and consistent band program in the Texas public schools, as well as having enjoyed a long and successful career, according to a news release. The induction traditionally would be held this summer, but because of COVID-19 restrictions, all Texas Bandmasters Association activities have been suspended for 2020. "I was in love with my job for 40 years," Pace said. "Don't misunderstand, I didn't always like everything I had to do, and I didn't always like situations that happened, but I can honestly say that there was never a day I didn't want to go to school. Band directing is a great way to make a life." Pace began his teaching career in La Mesa, Texas, as the junior high school band director in 1966. His band earned the sweepstakes rating that first year, meaning the group earned superior rating in both the concert and sight reading portions of the contest. He later taught in Altus and Woodward, Oklahoma. The Woodward assignment was his first high school lead director job. Pace returned to Texas in 1972 and taught at Goliad Middle School in Big Spring and then at Lee Middle School in San Angelo. In 1979, he returned to La Mesa, first at the junior high school, and then 4 years later, he became the head band director at La Mesa High School, where the band received Division I ratings in both UIL and festival competitions. In 1991, Pace moved to Andrews to become the assistant director at Andrews High School, where he established the first jazz band program in the history of the school. In 2000, Pace took the reins of the Andrews band program and became head director at Andrews High School. Under his direction, the Mighty Mustang Band received its first sweepstakes rating in 14 years. During his 40-year career, he participated as all-region band clinician conductor and served as faculty member at summer band camps, including 31 years at Angelo State. Pace retired in the spring of 2006, but continued to help a number of bands as clinician, consultant, summer band instructor, etc. In July 2019, Water Valley ISD asked Pace to take its band program for 1 year. The band received all Division I's at Region Marching Contest and qualified and participated in the Texas State Marching Band Championships in San Antonio. On March 3, 2020, the band received all Division I's at the Region 6 Concert and Sight Reading Contest, and brought home a sweepstakes trophy. Pace and his wife, Joanne, both consider their year in Water Valley a blessing. The Water Valley community, the school staff and faculty, and most of all the students, were amazing, Joanne said. Mr. Pace says the Water Valley students were some of the finest students he's taught. The following articles were published Monday, August 3rd. San Angelo duo arrested after search reveals LSD, cocaine, and other drugs in home. By Elena Edgen. Two San Angelo residents have been arrested after an investigation involving local and federal law enforcement led to the discovery of various drugs, according to a Tom Green County Sheriff's Office news release. On Wednesday, July 29th, investigators with the Sheriff's Office, Homeland Security, and Texas Department of Public Safety executed a search warrant on a residence in the 1400 block of Culberson Street. During the search, investigators found 1.23 grams of suspected cocaine, 11 pounds of marijuana, and 0.55 ounces of suspected psilocybin mushrooms. They also found six suspected MDMA tablets, also known as ecstasy, and two doses of lysergic acid diethylamide, commonly known as LSD, according to the release. Robert Paul Leaptrot, 31, and Destiny Rachel Torres, 28, were arrested on suspicion of possession of marijuana between 5 and 50 pounds and two counts of possession of a controlled substance. Torres was released Saturday on a $27,500 bond. Leaptrot remained in Tom Green County Jail in lieu of the same bond as of noon Monday, according to online jail records. San Angelo Walk to End Alzheimer's happening online for 2020 due to COVID-19 by Rosanna Aguilera. The San Angelo Walk to End Alzheimer's will take place as scheduled, but will look different due to concerns about COVID-19. Past walks have always been a gathering of a large group of participants who then traverse a set course, according to a news release. Due to COVID concerns, that's not possible in 2020. Wendy Vizek, Vice President, Constituent Events at the Alzheimer's Association, says this year's Walk to End Alzheimer's on September 12th will be everywhere. "The pandemic is changing how we walk, but it doesn't change the need to walk," Vizek said. "This year, more than ever, we need to come together to support all those affected by Alzheimer's and other dementia." This year's walk, participants can walk almost anywhere, in their neighborhoods, on walking trails, wherever they can keep safe social distancing. Participants ranging from families to teams to individuals will all be able to connect through a new Walk phone app. This app will let users access information and resources from the association, participate in the walk opening ceremony, as well as follow a virtual walk path, track steps and distance, and manage Facebook fundraisers. Because the 2020 walk is tied together online, participants will see the opening ceremony with local speakers and MCs, as well as the Promise Flowers presentation, according to the release. Also in the mix is the Promise Garden, where participants in the past have written a loved one's name on a flower and set it into a mass of flowers left by other walkers. This year, the garden will be set up by Alzheimer's Association staff and volunteers and will be available in a view-only component. To sign up, visit act.alz.org/walk or call the 24/7 helpline at 800-272-3900. Work from San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts gets extended visit in EU Ambassador's Home by John Tufts. A collection of paintings, sculpture, and ceramics on loan from the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts will have an extended stay in Washington, D.C. for at least another 3 years. In June 2019, Stavros Lambriendis, the European Union ambassador to the United States, and his wife opened their home to 30 pieces of artworks from Texas and around the world, ceramic pottery, paintings, and sculpture from SAMHSA. While American art has appeared in embassies and the official residences of U.S. ambassadors since the Kennedy administration, officials last year said it was practically unheard of for American museum art to be loaned to a foreign ambassador's private residence. The contract was set to expire in 2020, but was recently extended. During an earlier interview, Lambrindis equated the exchange as a homeward journey for the works of art. We celebrate so many joint histories and roots that come through millions of our people that have grown up in Texas, settled in Texas, settled elsewhere in the U.S. Many of them are of European descent, Lambrindis said. Their names originate from Ireland, Scotland, France, Spain. In many ways, for those artists, being exhibited at the EU residence in Washington is like returning home, Lambrindis said. Past visitors to the EU residence have included Supreme Court justices, officials with the Trump administration, state governors, international bankers, heads of media, and famous artists. Four paintings lent by Rene Alvarado, a globally renowned artist living in San Angelo, were hung in the residence as well. I feel honored and humbled to have my artwork displayed at the EU residence, along the diverse and beautiful body of work from SAMHSA's permanent collection, Alvarado said. Alvarado credited success of the project to Mario Castillo, who helped spearhead getting art from San Angelo to Washington, D.C., and is the next-door neighbor of Lambrindis. He worked diligently to provide an international platform for SAMHSA and me, Alvarado said. This experience has expanded my creative horizons and stimulated my creative process. Artwork from SAMHSA and Alvarado, which has a joint insurance value of more than $145,000, will be on display in the ambassador's residence until August 2023. The following articles I will be reading were published Sunday, August 2nd. The first article from this date is a front page article from the Standard Times. That's quite a long article. COVID-19 war zone. Town once isolated from COVID-19 stretched thin as deaths mount. By John Tufts. Del Rio. On a sweltering afternoon near the Texas-Mexico border, Ixmena Colosio donned a powder blue face mask before walking to a chain link fence to hang the handmade sign clutched in her tiny fingers. Scrawled in bright neon marker, it reads, "For the best teacher, we will miss you." There were 27 other such signs hanging at Irene C. Cardwell Elementary on Wednesday, July 22nd, to mourn the loss of Chavel Gutierrez, 55, who died a day earlier from COVID-19. Chavel Gutierrez isn't the first person to succumb to the virus in this small southwest Texas border town of about 35,000 residents, and officials are certain she won't be the last. The virus has stretched Del Rio's resources to its limits. As both city and county officials scramble to stop the spread of the disease, local healthcare workers are fighting a war on two fronts, a battle to save their patients' lives and their own. "We were at 13 cases for a long time until we got to around June," said Dr. Jaime Gutierrez, who serves as the local health authority. As of Tuesday, July 27th, there are 1,163 positive cases of COVID-19 in Valverde County and 13 deaths, according to state data. Gutierrez said local counts place the number of fatalities much higher. Freezer trucks to store human remains arrived in Valverde County on Saturday, July 25th. "How many more deaths is it going to take before people decide enough is enough?" Gutierrez asked. No one in Del Rio knew the answer to that question, but so far, it's not 41. "I've never seen anything like it." Dressed in a dark suit and tie, Rick Robles looked serene for a man who began his workday abruptly at 2 a.m. "I got that one and another call from the hospital around 6:45 in the morning," he said. "Some people think COVID-19 is a hoax. They should spend a day with me." A lifelong resident of Del Rio, Robles owns and operates Sunset Memorial Oaks Funeral Home, where he's also responsible for embalming the dead. COVID-19 is like nothing he's experienced in his 30 years in the funeral industry, and he wishes more people would take the virus seriously. It's 12:28 p.m. on a Thursday, and Robles hasn't had enough time to eat breakfast. His funeral home averages between 8 to 10 services a week. That's no longer the case. "We've had about 18 funerals so far this week," Robles said. "Last week it was 22. It's a spike, and the difference is COVID. I've never seen anything like it. The situation with COVID-19 has gotten out of hand in this area." There is data to support Robles' claim. Valverde County's population is slightly above 49,000 residents. Its positive cases match counties more than twice its size. As of July 28, Valverde County had reported up to 1,163 positive cases. Counties similar in size to Valverde include Burnett, Kendall, and Lamar. There were slightly more than 1,230 cases of COVID-19 between those three counties during the same date. Speaking as a funeral director, Robles said one tragedy he's witnessed from COVID-19 is how it's stripped away people's normal ability to seek comfort in one another as they mourn their dead. Chapel and graveside services are limited to 10 people who have to maintain their distance or risk spreading the disease. "That's hard for families," Robles said. "It's even harder for them to know their loved one passed on by themselves, without having family there to hold their hand when they shared their last breath." Alejandra Valadez knows exactly how that feels. "I don't wish this upon anyone. My grandmother was alone when she died. There were nurses, but not family," Valadez said. Dionisia Valadez, 88, had been living in a long-term care facility in Del Rio when staff placed the building on lockdown in March. On July 7th, she was rushed into the ICU at Valverde Regional Medical Care Center. Dionisia tested positive for COVID-19 and influenza A and B. Valadez was able to see her grandmother in the hospital, but not in person. She had to use an online video conferencing app, and the conversation was brief. "The last time I saw her, she wasn't responsive," Valadez said. "I told her I loved her very much and that we were waiting for her to come home. She never did." 5 days after being admitted into the ICU, Dionisia Valadez succumbed to the virus on July 12th. She was cremated soon after. There was no funeral service. Valadez said she feels traumatized and infuriated after losing her grandmother to the virus. She wasn't able to hold her grandmother, who lay dying in the hospital, and she's upset by the number of people who still aren't wearing masks. She, too, has a message for those who think COVID-19 is a hoax. "It's real. It's here. And you don't know who could be a carrier. Wearing a mask could save someone else," Valadez said. "I don't wish this upon anyone. My grandmother helped raise me. It's hard watching someone you love fighting for their life and not being able to do anything about it." Valadez continues to urge people to be responsible and do what they can to stop the spread of the virus, a mission shared by city, county, and Del Rio healthcare officials who have likened COVID-19 to a viral hurricane. County sheriff says, "People need to be mindful." One institution that has weathered the COVID-19 storm well so far has been the Valverde County Jail, which hadn't reported a single case of the virus as of July 28th, and Valverde County Sheriff Joe Frank Martinez aims to keep it that way. "People are dying," Martinez said. "To slow this down, I think people need to be mindful of what's going on around them." Martinez and officials with the Texas Commission on Jail Standards were cognizant of the virus early on. Since February, inmates at Valverde County Jail have not been allowed to see family members in person. They instead communicate on video through electronic devices. The jail has one entrance, and everyone is screened upon entry for signs of COVID. Fogging machines spray an alcohol-based chemical throughout the facility 2 to 3 times per week. Border Patrol apprehensions are also handled elsewhere, and the jail no longer holds misdemeanor offenders. Felony offenders and inmates charged with family violence are placed in a restrictive housing unit where they're closely monitored. Outside the jail, Martinez said, county and city law enforcement agencies have responded to complaints of people who aren't wearing masks, which have included food service employees at restaurants. I can't stress enough that we need to be respectful toward one another, Martinez said. I think people need to be responsible for their actions, and in my opinion, they need to be held accountable for them. A person who's not respecting someone's space ought to be considered a deadly weapon. It's Martinez's contention that COVID-19 is so prevalent in Del Rio that it's impossible to know who's contagious at this point, and not social distancing or wearing a mask could very well kill someone. In the beginning, this community thought that COVID was just hype, said Valverde Chief Deputy Waylon Bullard. The majority are wearing masks now. There are still a few who say, it's my right, I don't have to, but they're becoming fewer and far between. One city official said those who insist on not wearing a mask are trying to hold on to some degree of normalcy. At this point, the article jumps to another page in the paper, and it doesn't seem to continue. It seems to miss part of the article. So I'm going to have to resume where the article picks up on this page. She said her family is better and understands the risks of what returning to work at a hospital with 5 coronavirus units could mean. I'm worried about getting COVID again, but I was worried before, Martin said. Being a nurse, that's what we're here for. What we're fighting for is a biological warfare, and everybody is fighting for their lives. To help Martin and her colleagues win the battle is the United States military. Soldiers are helping fight the disease. In mid-July, the U.S. Navy Rural Rapid Response Team 1 arrived at Valverde Regional Medical Center. Their presence has been described as a godsend. Composed of Commander Sean McKay, a U.S. Navy doctor, Lieutenant Commander Sarah Jagger, an ICU critical care nurse, and Captain Stephanie Corzaro with the 62nd Medical Brigade, they're providing rural hospital staff with critical knowledge in how to combat COVID-19. A specialist in the U.S. Army, Juran Tolliver, and other service members provide additional support. McKay works directly with COVID patients in Del Rio. He's currently stationed in Maryland, where he's served in various hospitals as a pulmonary critical care doctor. He said the Navy developed medical teams about a month ago to support rural communities dealing with the coronavirus. We're being sent wherever we're needed, McKay said. Other Navy teams have gone to New York. We have Navy critical care teams in places like Virginia, Jacksonville, Florida, San Diego, Okinawa, and Guam. McKay said everyone has been welcoming and helpful while his team works alongside rural caregivers to slow the spread of the virus. He said his team will stay in Del Rio as long as the Department of Defense feels they're needed in the area. Valverde County Judge Lewis Owens hopes they stay a while. How much will it cost to fight COVID-19? Judge Owens is part of what's referred to as the Valverde County COVID Task Force. He and other locally elected officials and healthcare providers meet often at the county courthouse to decide what actions are needed to stop the virus. The county recently hired 6 contact tracers to track how COVID-19 is spreading through the community. With so many positive cases already, Owens said the process is often daunting, but that he and other officials are doing everything they can. Deputies are now serving citations to people in Valverde County who test positive for COVID-19. If they leave their home, if they violate quarantine, if they do not follow social distancing guidelines, the county will fine them up to $250, which could increase at a later date. There's no book for this, Owen said. For a flood, you have a template. For a tornado, you have a template. You have things you follow. But for COVID, things we thought were right 2 months ago, we're having to rethink. Owens likens COVID-19 more to a viral hurricane, and at the end of the day, Valverde County will need more funding if it's going to weather the storm. A month ago, when COVID began to skyrocket, Valverde County had more than $724,000 it received in relief funds. As of July 22nd, all but $59,000 had been spent. Owen said the court had set aside $200,000, which officials used purchasing supplies to battle COVID early during the pandemic. We bought a machine to make disinfectant, purchased hand sanitizer, handed out food. We didn't wait for these other programs to kick in. We started buying stuff, Owen said. We bought masks, N95s, and gowns. Owens hasn't crunched all the numbers, but in consideration to staffing and other ancillary needs, said it might take another $1.2 million a year for Valverde County to effectively deal with the coronavirus. But with so many unknowns, it's difficult to land on a number. I've already looked at the budget for the next fiscal year, Owens said. We're going to be fine. The problem is that I'm using my reserves to be fine. The problem is also, what am I going to do the following fiscal year, and then the year after, if this continues? At this point, no one can say. COVID-19 still feels like a puzzle, and it remains unknown how many pieces are missing, even when some of the things Del Rio has lost are glaringly obvious. The absence in Del Rio at San Felipe Creek. San Felipe Creek is a spring-fed oasis along the eastern edge of the city. The water is so clear you can drop a stone off a bridge and watch it as it sinks to the bottom of the creek bed. Ordinarily in July, you would both hear and see Del Rio's children splashing in the water while parents watch from nearby shaded picnic tables, at least until, like so much else, it was closed by the coronavirus. Yellow caution tape fastened to park benches flutter in the wind, and San Felipe Creek is now defined by absence, by what Del Rio no longer has because of COVID. The absence is as real as the virus itself, as real as the teacher who won't be in the classroom, or the grandparent who will be missing at the dinner table. It wasn't always this way, and it's uncertain when things in Del Rio will start to feel normal again.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.